Welcome, everyone, to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions' Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling program as they appear on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 34. And in this edition, we'll be taking a look at the Mid-Atlantic television program that was taped on Wednesday, September 8th, 1982, at WPCQ Studios, Channel 36 in Charlotte, North Carolina, and began airing in local markets the weekend of Saturday, September 11th, 1982. If you like the podcast and want a little bit more of it on social media, just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod. We update everything when we can, with most of the focus going onto our Twitter page, but we also have a Facebook page, a Facebook group, an Instagram, and more. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us as we review these shows, you can do so by signing up for the WWE Network at WWENetwork.com. And you can also follow along by the way of David Taub's write-ups of the network shows, which are available over at MidAtlanticGateway.com. And finally, if you'd like to take an alternate look at this week in wrestling history, head on over to MidSouthPod.com, the Mid-South television wrestling review show with the great Brian Last and Mike Mills, who cover Today in Bill Watts' territory on episode number 37 of their program. We've got the one-man gang against Junkyard Dog. We got fallout from last week's Mid-South Tag Team Championship bout. Tim Horner and Tony Anthony debut. And two, count them, two Mr. Wrestling 2s. Find out about all that and more. Check out the Mid-South Television Wrestling Review Show over at MidSouthPod.com. And Roman, always a bevy of interesting names over at Mid-South right now, but compared with what we have here in Mid-Atlantic, I wouldn't trade it for anything right now. We got good stuff taking place here. September of 1982, the weekend of September 11th, we're back on the scene. Sir Oliver Humperdinck is running the show. We've got a brand new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion. Jack Briscoe dropped the title to the newly turned Paul Jones last week, as we found out. Abdullah the Butcher coming back into the area to go after Sergeant Slaughter. I'm sorry, go after Wahoo McDaniel again. Sergeant Slaughter is still serving a 30-day suspension, and that actually comes up during this episode too. But a lot of crazy stuff going on, not the least of which is how we start the show. The boogie-woogie man Jimmy Valiant out there, but a lot of craziness once again this week.
Yeah, it's a great time in Mid-Atlantic. You know, like you said, we have a new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion in Paul Jones. Humperdinck's group keeps growing. You know, he's got Big Bad Leroy Brown in there. Greg Valentine comes in. He's always involved in a lot of good angles and everything. And this is just a good, exciting time to be a fan of the Mid-Atlantic area.
And the show begins right with an interview, and it is Sir Oliver Humperdinck, a ubiquitous presence on this program. Joe Ledoux and Bad Leroy Brown come out with him, and immediately Jimmy Valiant dances out. So immediately the overdub to his music hits, and this was an extra loud version on the network of Jimmy Valiant's music playing. He's got on his FM 100 Means Music black tights, and he comes dancing out with his belt around one arm, and in the other arm, he's carrying around his little red portable cassette player that he has where he listens to his music. He dances out, gets in the ring. Leroy Brown and Joe Ledoux have a look on their face of just, what in the hell is this? And as he goes into the ring for his match with Juan Reynoso, he leaves the tape recorder at the ringside. And this is before the match is even begun, by the way. Reynoso just grabs Valiant. They slide over to the corner. Like, literally, that's kind of what they look like. They kind of just slid on over. And as that happened, the bad guys got a hold of the cassette player, Roman, and then smashed it all to pieces.
Oh, they destroyed it in a million pieces. And the comment that Valiant made afterwards, when he says, "I would rather you mess with one of my old ladies than cut my hair and destroy my cassette player." I don't know, that statement just kind of stuck out with me. Like, obviously he values his cassette player that probably cost him $9.99 down at Woolworths or something, but they destroyed it into 100 billion pieces, and you can kind of see it coming a mile away when he comes out dancing to the music and sets the cassette player down. When a babyface gets a trophy, you kind of know by the end of the show the trophy's going to be destroyed, and you could see it coming, and that's exactly what they did.
Well, he's got a lot of old ladies, Roman, so I guess he could always spread those around, you know, but you can only have one little red portable cassette player that you can come dancing out to. You know, I guess you got to put your value somewhere, and we didn't even see it at first. You know, we heard something cracking in the background, and then the camera finally, the shot finally goes to where the thing is in pieces on the ground, and Joe Ledoux is stomping it as if he was stomping Kelly Kinski a little bit later on in the program, putting the boots to this thing, which of course causes Valiant to come busting out of the ring onto his hands and knees, almost in tears. Now, if this was Bob Backlund and the WWF title and Superstar Graham was tearing it all up, that's one thing. With Jimmy Valiant in tears, you know, it was a little bit more tolerable, but it was just a completely ridiculous, yet a completely on the nose Jimmy Valiant reaction to this thing.
Yeah, and it brought back memories of something I used to see a few years later in the AWA with Rock and Roll Buck Zumhoff. You know, there was always a way for the Sheik, Adnan El Casey, or one of the heels to get Zumhoff all riled up was to destroy his boombox. And yeah, Valiant lost his mind. You don't mess with his cassette player, evidently.
Yeah, a real tragedy. In hindsight, they should have, you know, completely stomped Zumhoff and broken him into a million pieces a long time ago. But that's a story for a different day. But we have the after effects, the sad, sad after effects of Jimmy Valiant, because they immediately went to break, by the way. They slid to break with Valiant on the floor on his hands and knees crying, trying to sweep up the pieces of his cassette player back up again. And this is where we'll pick it up.
Jimmy, they smash it to pieces.
Humperdinck, you pig-eyed jerk goof, you! First of all, he cuts my hair, and now he stops my music! That's personal! That's personal, Vinny! I'd rather for you to mess with one of my old ladies than mess with my hair or this record that's nothing! This goof right here, this goof is going to pay for it right now! Humperdinck, I'm not...
All right, if I can say any Juan Reynoso's going to pay for it... And into the ring he goes like a wild man, and Reynoso very quickly out of the ring to stop the action, as Valiant is like a wild man in that ring, really upset at Humperdinck, Leroy Brown, and Joe Ledoux. And he's going to take all of his frustration and all of his anger out on Juan Reynoso. Elbow, and Reynoso is down, the elbow drop. He might pin him right here. Three, he wins. And it only took him just a matter of seconds. Yes, sir, here he is.
Humperdinck!
Jimmy Valiant, in just a matter of seconds, fans, watch the finish right here in slow motion. As Juan Reynoso got all of the anger and all of the frustration that Valiant had for Humperdinck, Joe Ledoux, and Bad Bad Leroy Brown.
There we hear the after effects, and it. I guess we should remind everybody that man is also your NWA Mid-Atlantic Television Champion, too. By the way, Jimmy Valiant is the man on his hands and knees crying over the cassette recorder. Any thoughts on the very short encounter there?
Well, Valiant was never one that got paid by the hour anyway. And now that he was riled up, he definitely made a point to make short work of Reynoso. And in fact, the match was so short, Valiant didn't even have time to take his shirt off.
Tommy Young's our referee for the day, and Joe Ledoux and Leroy Brown against Mike Rotundo and Kelly Kinski. And we saw Joe Ledoux and Kelly Kinski beat the hell out of each other last week. Sir Oliver Humperdinck is at ringside for this match. Joe Ledoux has basically replaced Ivan Koloff as his boogeyman, going after the boogeyman, literally, going after Jimmy Valiant, because that's pretty much Joe Ledoux's job right now. So all of these pieces coming together, and then we have this match where, man, some plundering and thundering, and Joe Ledoux makes you work for everything that you have. Very Ole Anderson-esque that way, just one of those guys that if you're going to even try to snapmare him, you are going to work to get that thing. And he is in there with Kelly Kinski, who's a big guy, and Mike Rotundo, who we've talked about, is a notoriously big guy who's, you know, obviously got both of them. They got a lot of wrestling skills and amateur wrestling skills and physical skills here. And, you know, they were in there with two perfect guys for it, a massive guy in Leroy Brown and a guy in Joe LeDuc will just thump away at you.
Yeah, LeDuc and Leroy Brown, they're two hard hitters. And, you know, like you were talking about with LeDuc, I don't think anybody back then watched wrestling and looked at LeDuc and goes, ah, this stuff's phony. I mean, LeDuc, when he hit you, he hit you. And, you know, Humperdinck was on commentary and, you know, he gave Rotundo, he threw Rotundo a bone, you know, said he would actually like to have him in the house of Humperdinck, which I thought was cool for a young up and coming Rotundo to get thrown that recognition like that. And, you know, as far as the match goes, it was a little bit weird at the end to see Konieski try to kick out, you know, and the ref counted to three. And I don't know, it just looked kind of weird. I don't know if you have any comments on that, Mike.
Well, it just seems like it's the second week in a row where Konieski and LeDuc were, is this a shooting match? You know, did Gene tell his son he can't come back home again to Canada if he doesn't beat up on the guy from Quebec? But it made for some entertaining viewing. And you bring up Sir Oliver Humperdinck talking about Mike Rotundo in nice fashion. I think we're going to hear a little bit of that with the audio I'm about to play here. And, you know, a lot of this really centers around Bob Caudle still being very offended over the House of Humperdinck daring touch Jimmy Valiant's personal property. Let's hear a little bit from Sir Oliver Humperdinck, which will bleed into how the match ends, which is a pretty nice looking and pretty impressive looking one armed over the knee backbreaker by LeDuc on Konieski. But here we go.
Holds on and into the studio now, talking with Sir Oliver Humperdinck, another member of the House of Humperdinck, Greg Valentine. And Valentine walks into the studio, stands at ringside with his arm around Humperdinck. Brown now still with a headlock on Rotundo. Big, rough, tough, strong Joe LeDuc outside of the ring, as is Kelly Konieski outside. And what a way to begin a program when you get a guy like Jimmy Valiant out here, and the destruction that was caused by Sir Oliver Humperdinck and two of his men. And here is Humperdinck right here with us now. Let's get a microphone over here and talk to Sir Oliver Humperdinck just a moment. And I got to say, that was certainly uncalled for, destroying Valiant's personal property that way.
Well, you know what opinions are like. I don't have to tell you that. I don't care what you think, or I don't care what anybody else thinks. I'm here right now to talk about this team that I put together, Leroy Brown and Big Joe LeDuc. You know, I have nothing to worry about. As long as I surround myself with these animals, nobody, including Jimmy Valiant, is going to put their hands on me.
You got to worry about Jimmy Valiant. He already was plenty upset for you. You cut his hair. That really made him mad. Now you've got the guy wild. He's like a wild man now.
Well, if you can't stand the heat, it's time to get out of the kitchen. This is a man's sport. This is a man's business. And if Jimmy Valiant hasn't got the guts, let him get out of it. But if he makes a tag to this kid standing on the outside, we might have to get a little rough.
All right, here is Konieski now trying to get to his feet. Leroy Brown still with that headlock on him, that cross face. I got to ask you again. I can't get it off my mind because I really thought it was so unnecessary attacking Jimmy Valiant like you guys did. It was just to destroy someone's personal property is really a low-down trick.
What about to threaten somebody's safety? What about the statements he's been making about me? That's all right?
No. You have really done a lot of things to Jimmy Valiant.
What's
other
this?
Than destroy
What's
his
this?
Property.
Beat him up, Joe.
Beat
him up, Joe.
Watch Here's this. The big lumberjack.
One arm, brother. One arm. Take a look at that.
When he
That's
hooks
all.
That leg, there's no way. No way you're going to get up from that. Joe LeDuc. You had Konieski high into the air with a backbreaker. Brown comes out, runs into Sir Oliver Humperdinck as Rotundo had to get in and give Konieski a little hand. The winners, referee Tommy Young raising the hand of Joe LeDuc.
So there we hear the end of Joe LeDuc and Big Bad Leroy Brown defeating Mike Rotundo and Kelly Konieski. You heard the fans cheering there at the end. That's because Mike Rotundo ran in as soon as Joe LeDuc started laying the boots down to Kelly Konieski, clears out the ring. The heels don't put up any fight at all. Mike Rotundo, obviously a very important project to Dory Funk Jr. in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling at this point, so keeping him protected. Kelly Kanitsky to a little bit of a lesser degree here, obviously, as he takes the fall for the second week in a row to Joe Ledoux. And also, Roman, notable for the second week in a row that Greg the Hammer Valentine, the newest member of the House of Humperdinck, has moseyed on out during a match to walk over and relay information to Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Now, could this have been a production issue? Because immediately after Greg Valentine went out to talk to Humperdinck, Humperdinck moseyed on over and joined Bob Cottle on commentary, where we got to hear a little bit of his voice. Or is this something that is going to continue to be a plot that's being laid out? Are they lulling us into something here? We're going to have to see how it goes here, but it is noticeable that Greg Valentine went back out there for a second time, doesn't interfere with the match, and just seems to be communicating with Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
Yeah, I thought it was weird when we saw it before. And to see it again, like you said, maybe they got something planned for the future, but it is kind of weird to come out like that.
Now, after this, we got where our localized promos would be, and I was not initially going to air this. Ben Alexander and Jim Dalton. Bob throws it back to Jim Dalton, says the magic word, Ricky Steamboat, that fires Jim Dalton all up when he's talking about all of these sissies and babies and other ne'er-do-wells who are looking for handouts and not putting themselves on the line like all the tough guys like Jim Dalton and Ben Alexander are.
All right, fans, at ringside right now, Jim Dalton, Ben Alexander. And I tell you, fellas, we just saw two really tough big guys in that ring together in a tag team match, Jim.
Well, let me tell you one thing right now. I've been around a couple of years myself. Anytime you've got guys in there like Leroy Brown, Joe LeDuc, you've got to watch out. You know, I agree with their style of wrestling. This is what it's all about, brother.
You do agree with that?
I agree with their style altogether. This business is about championships, money, and fame. And other than that, brother, you ain't got nothing. I don't care what you're doing out here.
So anyway, the end justifies the means is
what
you're
saying. That's right. If you want it bad enough, you go in there and get it. Now, if you don't want it bad enough, like the majority of them don't, they want a free handout, then they come out here and they cry, and they tell everybody, oh, what a bad break I had. Oh, this guy done this. If it hadn't been for that, Lord, have mercy, I'd have beat that poor boy. Hadn't been for that. Well, guys like LeDuc, like myself, like Ben Alexander, like the rest of them, we don't cry, brother. We go after it. We don't put up excuses. We don't say why we was beat. The only reason is ourself is why we're beat.
Ben, you agree with that?
That's right. You know, you have the guys come out and they say, if this happened, if that happened, but this and but that. You know, if all the ifs and buts were canned as nuts, we'd have a very merry Christmas. Is that not right?
He's talking about people crying. I got to tell you, guys like, here you got guys like Rick Steamboat. You got guys
like
Wahoo.
Now you're talking
McDaniel,
about real crybabies.
Like
Wahoo Briscoe. McDaniels, you're a big crybaby. Steamboat, you're another big crybaby. That other Indian with the feathers on his head up there, that Youngblood, he's another crybaby. You can just keep naming them crybabies. Jack Briscoe, you are another crybaby. You come out here with faults. You find faults in everybody except yourself, boy. The biggest fault is you. You're not up to par. We spend hours in that gym, brother, on the road training. A lot of these guys, you know what Joe LeDuc and them run a day, brother? They run 15 and 20 miles a day after a four-hour workout in the gym, nonstop, super heavyweight set. Briscoe, Wahoo, Youngblood, Steamboat, can we say the same about you? No, that's why you're losers, and you'll always be losers.
All right, fans, that's it right here ringside, Ben Alexander and Jim Dalton.
So he didn't reinvent the wheel or anything, but when it comes to those in lieu of local promo spots where we get these promos with guys working underneath, Jim Dalton has been around for, you know, at this point, 25 years or whatever it is. Looks like a pro. He's got the tan. He's got a good look. He's in shape still. He's a perfect guy to be out there, it literally as an enhancement talent. This is why, you know, the term jobber sometimes. Carpenter or enhancer is a far more fitting thing, and this is a guy that used to do promos alongside Jack Dalton, a.k.a. Don Fargo. So, you know, he's not scared of a microphone at all or trying to rile up the locals. Maybe it shouldn't come as a surprise, but with so many of these being so, well, rough, because it's young guys like your Tony Anthony's at this point and your Keith Larson's, and I guess it was lulled into a false sense of security And Jim Dalton snapped me out of it there. You fired me up there with that promo.
You know, I've got it in my notes that for an underneath guy, he really cuts a pretty good promo. You know, and what's impressive about him is when he talks, you get the feeling he actually believes what he's saying. It comes across that way in the interview. He comes across confident, you know, believing in what he's saying. And I think he does a very good job cutting promos, especially considering he's an enhancement guy.
This is where it's nice to have the network, and it's nice that they're doing what they're doing, because most people, maybe this got out there somehow, some way, to some market that wasn't getting a promo, but it's usually not the case. They had something else, like, you know, we'd hear Big Bill Ward, you know, hyping up bumper stickers or do this or to do that, just bringing in guys to talk, but they would be stars, you know, for those markets. It wouldn't be these promos, but because of the network, we're able to see these promos, and for the most part, they are awful. You know, right down to the end, you know, Sam Houston in 1986, that's pretty much, you know, when they do the switch over to NWA Pro, that's where the network stops with Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling episodes. So, you know, that's our end date for right now for this. Actually, that's not true at all. We're going to continue on for a long time after that, too. But as far as the Mid-Atlantic branded shows, right up until the end, we have these promos, and we wouldn't get a chance to see these otherwise. And sometimes they're really good like this, and they can make you to think about somebody in a different way or look at an older name from the past, like a Jim Dalton, who I, you know, you see in results. I didn't grow up in the Gulf, so I didn't see what the Dalton boys did. You know, I can only read about it and, you know, in Don Fargo's book and hear stories from peoples of the past. You know, how else would I have ever seen Jim Dalton cut a promo? By getting a chance to see him, now I can see how those guys would talk people into the building and fire up the locals and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, an excellent deal there. So I really, really like that a lot. And obviously enough to include it on the show here and to gush about it so much. But we'll go to our next match here, too, as I'm done gushing. It is another one in a series of some really great television matches that have been appearing on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. Paul Jones and Greg Valentine against Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel, the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion, the United States Heavyweight Champion. All four guys in the ring have been great champions and obviously have a high level of notoriety and name appeal. Just a excellent, excellent match that way too short. It was a TV match, Roman, but another fine piece of matchmaking and TV production.
Yeah, this very easily could have been the TV main event, the feature match, whatever you want to call it. It's pretty much an all-star match. You know, you got the team of Briscoe and Wahoo against Valentine and Paul Jones. And what I like is that there's individual storylines within this contest. You know, you got Jones, who just recently beat Briscoe for the Mid-Atlantic title. They've mentioned that Valentine came down from New York to get his hands on Wahoo. He wants to get a hold of the U.S. Heavyweight Championship. So, you know, if Valentine were to pin Wahoo in this contest, for example, they could have had Valentine be the number one contender to the U.S. title. So there's a lot of storylines going on in here besides four solid workers.
And those storylines were getting put across by Bob Cottle, because they mentioned Wahoo McDaniel and promoters trying to set up a match between he and Ric Flair, who, you know, as you remember from a few shows back at the beginning of August, Flair's proclamation that he was done facing Wahoo McDaniel led to the whole deal where Jim Crockett Jr. resigned as the head of the NWA. And there is the prominence of Sir Oliver Humperdinck and the House of Humperdinck. Sergeant Slaughter's 30-day suspension coming to an end is noted in this match. Abdullah the Butcher coming into the area, which he will be from September 16th to September 19th, is noted here, because he's going after Wahoo McDaniel at the behest of Sir Oliver Humperdinck. So they got a lot of stories across here, and the main story inside the ring was the bad guys working on Jack Briscoe's leg, because these were the two guys accused of jumping Jack Briscoe in the parking lot, which led to the match between Jones and Jack Briscoe that Briscoe was banged up for, but also because that's just a natural occurrence when you have a guy that uses the Indian death lock and the other one that uses the figure four leg lock. So they had to go after somebody's leg, and Wahoo McDaniel was the one ultimately that got the hot tag in this match. And It didn't matter. The whole thing broke down at the end. Sir Oliver Humperdinck gets involved. We get a disqualification victory. That was a double DQ, but it's actually a DQ victory for Briscoe and Wahoo because of Humperdinck's interference. And we'll hear the end of the match here coming up shortly. But Roman, what were your thoughts on it? Obviously, it was there to get storylines across. So, you know, the fact that the time was short and how it ended, yeah, that's a little bit disappointing. But at least we got to see the four of them in there, which, you know, at the time on TV, you just didn't get all that often.
Yeah, I like this match, you know. And something I like, too, is the fact that, you know, even though it's a TV studio, the crowd's small. But in this match, they were a little bit louder than they are in other matches. And you can really hear the crowd pop when the baby faces chase the heels to the back. I like hearing the crowd get into it. You know, it just adds a little more excitement to it. And it was four solid workers. And to me, this match didn't disappoint. And I'm like you. I wish it had gone a little bit longer.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and play the end of the match here. Sir Oliver Humperdinck getting involved, and Jack Briscoe and Wahoo McDaniel after the match was over, and I start fading out as Bob Caudle throws it to the replay. They continue to fight outside the ring and basically shove the bad guys back through the door there in the back into the locker room. So that continued to break down there as Briscoe and McDaniel stood tall with the DQ victory, and here's the end.
He's going to make the tag again to Briscoe. Briscoe's gone for the leg, and he's got it locked in right here. And unless Jones can get some help, it'll all be over for him. Here's Valentine, and he missed the elbow. Wahoo McDaniel in. Wahoo and Greg are trading blows in the corner. And here comes Humperdinck. Humperdinck pulling Paul Jones over to the rope. Briscoe after Humperdinck, and Humperdinck now trying to avoid him, and Briscoe got him. And over the rope comes Humperdinck. Humperdinck quickly out of the ring. Valentine goes out. Referee Tommy Young says, ring the bell. That's it. It's going to all be over right here. Finally, somebody got a hand on Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and it was Jack Briscoe. Here's Jones back into the ring. Both of them go after Jones, and Greg Valentine now down for another shot. And Jones now will go out of the ring. Boy, Humperdinck deserted his boys. He left in a hurry. Watch it right here, and this is where it all began.
So there we hear the end of that match. You know, it probably should have been a double DQ since Briscoe was the one that pulled Humperdinck into the ring. And yes, Humperdinck was up on the ring apron, but Briscoe was the one who pulled him into the ring. But hey, it doesn't matter. The good guys got the victory. The people are cheering and happy. And then it was interview time. And we get a bunch in a short period of time here, led off not by Jack Briscoe or Wahoo McDaniel, although they're there too, alongside Ricky Steamboat. But nope, the boogie-woogie man, Jimmy Valiant, who is still all fired up.
All right, fans, the ringside right now, Jimmy.
Humperdinck, I'm going to make this short sweet, Bubba. Excuse me, man. Short sweet. You cut my hair and you stop my music. There's no more music. Humperdinck, you better give your soul to the Lord because your can is mine. Get ready to die.
Rick, I tell you, that guy, you know, it seemed he's really steamed up.
Yeah, he's real hot, and it seemed for a while that Humperdinck had the upper hand getting all these men in here and everything else, but he's got Jimmy Valiant hot, he's got me hot, I'm working on a few stipulations right here and now, and Humperdinck, somewhere down the line, you'll just find out exactly what they are.
All right, and two guys right here. Jack, you finally got your hands on Humperdinck.
I finally got a chance to do what I want to do. I want to get Greg Valentine and Paul Jones in the ring at the same time, but I was unable to catch him because of that Humperdinck, but believe me, Paul Jones, wherever you are, next time I get in the ring, it's going to be your leg. And if I get that figure four leg lock on you, Humperdinck's not going to be able there to save you like he just saved you now. When my brother gets here, he'll be looking after Humperdinck. Now the figure four goes down, Jones, you're finished.
Okay. Wahoo McDaniel right here, Wahoo. I tell you, this Humperdinck, he's pulling out all the stops, Wahoo.
He's pulling all the stops, you know, and I just like to ask, you know, he's got somebody coming in for me, yeah, too. And I'd like for to show this guy on the screen just to see what a 450-pound assassin looks like.
There he is right there.
Look at him. Abdullah the Butcher. You were here last year when the man slipped in the studio. got a coat hanger, almost put my eye out, almost eliminated me completely from wrestling. Well, they've all got together, put up $5,000 to get rid of me. Well, I'm going to tell you something right now. Abdullah, last time you slipped up on me, and you got me. But I know you're coming this time. $5,000, that's the man, a man has no heart and no soul that sells it for money. I got pride. I'm an Indian. I'm telling you right now, like I said last week, call Hertz Rent a Truck and get a big flatbed truck to put that 450-pound carcass on.
All right, fans, that's it right here ringside. We're about ready now for more action. Let's go to the ring now and the introduction for our next match. Our opponents right here, first from parts unknown, 253 pounds. Here is the Gladiator, the Gladiator. Across the ring now, his opponent from Hawaii at 228 pounds. Here is Rick Steamboat. Rick Steamboat.
Roman, there we hear from the good guys, and the most glaring thing to me, Sir Oliver Humperdinck rules this town. Every man there had a beef with somebody related to Sir Oliver Humperdinck, or in the case of Jimmy Valiant, directly with Sir Oliver Humperdinck. Although Joe Ledoux, of course, would be that guy. Steamboat with Leroy Brown, Jack Briscoe with Paul Jones, and Wahoo McDaniel with both Greg Valentine and, of course, Abdullah the Butcher, who I mentioned will be coming in from the 16th through the 19th, Norfolk, Richmond, Charlotte, and Greensboro. If some of these local promos have been playing on the show, that is one of the matches they have been talking about, if you were lucky enough to be in one of those towns. But Ricky Steamboat then would get in the ring for a match against the Gladiator. But before we move on to that, Roman, any thoughts on what any of those guys said?
Yeah, something that made me laugh was the Valiant interview. You know, you listeners of the podcast may recall a while back when Ivan Koloff was talking about Valiant. And he says, Jimmy, if you were laying in the road, bleeding and dying, I would not help you. I would kick you in the face. That did not make Valiant wish death on anybody. But doggone it, you destroy his tape player, he's going to tell you, get ready to die. I just can't believe how infuriated he's being over a cassette player.
Well, see, he's not. It's not just about the, you know, the people, because he's a man of the people, especially street people. But apparently he's a man of the music, and he needs to redeem the music, because apparently today was the day that the music died. You know, all of the music all over the world died with Jimmy Valiant's red cassette player. So he's got to come back and get revenge on music's behalf, I guess, here with pink-eyed Sir Oliver Humperdinck, which obviously was light-sensitive there. But Jimmy Valiant, at the beginning of the show, calling him straight out for those pink eyes that he had. Jimmy Valiant, very fired up today. Ricky Steamboat and the Gladiator. Roman, this was a very Ricky Steamboat match in that his opponent got in a lot of work and a lot of time on him. Now, I'm not saying that this wasn't like a 20-minute match or anything. I didn't time it, but let's say if it was 7 minutes, you know, the Gladiator got like 4 minutes in. And Ricky Steamboat, one thing he can do is sell like a gazillion dollars, and it did give him the opportunity to do that, but very standard TV fare, which basically was leading to an angle at the end. But before we get to that angle, what'd you think about this encounter?
Oh, like you said, it was typical Steamboat. You know, he's such a fluid technician. You know, you see early on when he's doing the arm drags and the leapfrogs, and just everything is so crisp. And Steamboat would always do little things, like subtle things that just, to me, stood out. Like at one point in this match, he has an arm bar on. And then you see him twist it just a little bit to give the illusion that he's putting a little more pressure on. And then naturally, of course, the Gladiator gets on the offense, which allows Steamboat to sell, makes the Gladiator look good. And I mean, I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Steamboat could make anybody look good. And typical Steamboat match, you know, came off very believable, hard-fought contest. And Steamboat emerges victorious. The mask comes off. And for anybody that's not watching on the network, that just listening to us, the masked man happened to be Ken Timms. But this was a good contest by Steamboat to make the masked Gladiator look a little bit better.
And during the match, Sir Oliver Humperdinck comes out because, well, there's a microphone. So you got to have Sir Oliver Humperdinck out there talking on it. And kind of funny. He and Leroy Brown come out there, and it's, of course, to kind of mock Steamboat and try to take attention away, but all it did was serve to fire up Steamboat, who really went after the Gladiator's mask without provocation. Just decided, hey, I'm going to go after this thing. And then immediately after he got the pinfall, stormed out of the ring and went right to the announce desk, where we got a surprising angle, as everybody's going to hear right now.
He's got those big old chops, but when you put those big old chops on big old Leroy, they're not doing any good at all.
He cut him down with one right there. Hoppernicki really.
Now here's an illegal move.
He's gone to the mask.
There's an illegal move right there. He's not supposed to be messing with that guy's mask. That's his business. Now that's an illegal move.
Steamboat took it off. Steamboat, who took the mask off of the Gladiator. And it's Sir Oliver, who is the Gladiator?
That's exactly what I'm talking about, how this man cheats. All you do is cheat. All you've ever done is cheat. You're nothing but a cheater. That's all you are, brother. You're a cheater. You're a cheater. That's what you are.
Two against one.
Go ahead. Two against one. Bring your kid brother down. Bring your kid brother down.
Youngblood from behind with a strap. And Humperdinck very quickly now trying to get out. And there goes bad Leroy Brown.
Bob, I've been telling everybody we're working on a lot of stipulations, some red tape. Well, this is part of the red tape right here. Ooh. And brother, Humperdinck, you just got a little taste of it. And you know how it feels. They can turn him as red as his hair.
All right, fans, what a wild, wild finish right there.
So there we heard the end of Ricky Steamboat defeating the Gladiator, tearing the mask off. As we mentioned, it is Ken Timms, storms out to the ring to get in the face of Sir Oliver Humperdinck and Leroy Brown, who are fine with him bringing it on, as they look like they were trying to set up an attack themselves before Jay Youngblood comes storming out of the back from behind Leroy Brown with a long country whipping strap and starts putting that to Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck. The heels go running away. Some good licks got put in before we heard Steamboat there at the end cut his promo. So looks like we're going to be having a stipulation added to the Leroy Brown-Ricky Steamboat feud, Roman. And as we know, with how history turns out, this won't be long for Steamboat. He and Youngblood will be doing some other things here very, very shortly, but I guess to try to add some gasoline to this this fire here with Youngblood or with Steamboat and Brown, just trying to do something to get something going, I guess.
Yeah, Steamboat had mentioned earlier on in the show that there would be stipulations, and now we know what one of them was. And, you know, it just got me thinking a little bit, Mike, about the ending of this match. It's not very often where you see an enhancement worker get unmasked, because normally when somebody gets unmasked, it's like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, Rick Rude under the mask or something. So just seeing that, it's like, it's not something you see every day, seeing an enhancement talent get unmasked like that.
Especially because it really didn't have, you know, unless it was to try to show off just a meaner streak in Steamboat with what's going on, it wasn't necessary. If you think, you know, just
right,
think about
exactly.
It, like they're just, there's no storyline. There's not a, you know, obviously there's not a, we've talked about a couple of masked men, but they're not, you know, swarming the Mid-Atlantic area or anything like that. So not exactly sure what was going on there, but we'll see how long Ken Tim sticks around. Maybe that was just something for him and he'll be going somewhere else here soon. But Ricky Steamboat gets the victory. It's then time for another set of In Lieu of Local promos, and we are not going to play these. It is Keith Larson and King Parsons. King Parsons cuts a pretty good promo, but it's stock fare. He's got nothing going on, so he basically just talks about Leroy Brown taking the money from Sir Oliver Humperdinck, how he met Leroy Brown through Pork Chop Cash in Texas years ago, but you know, really nothing there. And Keith Larson just talks about Gene Anderson, who was training Keith Larson at this time and would actually face Keith Larson in the next upcoming match, and Gene, of course, with Sir Oliver Humperdinck at his side, gets the victory very quickly over Keith Larson, hits a shake, rattle, and roll neckbreaker. Except there was no shake and no rattle and very little roll either, but just your old standard swing neck breaker, and Gene gets the victory there. Short match, obviously done to get Keith Larson some more ring time in there with the guy who is pretty much training him at this point, Roman, but any thoughts?
Yeah, it was a good, it was a short match to not expose Gene Anderson at this point in his career. And even though it was a short match, he still used the rest hold. So, you know, it's just the more you see Gene Anderson at this point, he's not a primetime player. He's not a guy that can go 20 minutes. So anything with Gene Anderson needs to be short. And thankfully, this was a short match.
We're recording this in 2021, and, you know, whenever anybody is listening to this, I don't think we've gone back into time when it comes to medicine or caring about performers, because there is no way in these times that Gene Anderson would have ever been out there after that stroke. He doesn't look, there's been a lot of guys out there who's looked worse than Gene did, what Gene Anderson looks like right now. But when you know the backstory, with you know what goes on, it's amazing he was out there. It's even more amazing about 3 years later when he's called on in January of 1985 by Ole to do a little something when that company was dying, right before Jim Crockett bought it. Just a rough situation. But he was training Keith Larson at the time and still working kind of on the regular. Shows that Jimmy, especially Johnny Weaver, would promote out in Western Virginia and Western North Carolina. But Gene Anderson was also a member of the House of Humperdinck. Now, you would not know that from these end-of-show interviews that we're going to have here, as Gene kind of just stays in the background and gets no shine at all from his teammates or his manager, who are still all fired up about everything else we heard of today. And we'll get a chance to hear Humperdinck one more time, and Paul Jones and Greg Valentine as we go out of the show. And I will say this, I always do my best to not play any network overdubs of anything for a variety of different reasons, but I had to do it this time. So we will hear Bob Cottle actually say so long for now. Believe it or not, you will hear the original of that, and you're going to hear the ridiculous theme music that they use place of Mid-Atlantic's music. But the reason I had to leave it in was because of what Sir Oliver Humperdinck says at the end of the interview, which still has me laughing right now.
The House of Humperdinck batting about 1,000%, I guess.
Let me tell you one thing. There's some things you don't do, and one of those things is put your hands on me and Jack Briscoe. I'm telling you this, and I'm telling also Jay Youngblood that somewhere down the line, sooner or later, I'm going to get both of you. And when I do, it's going to get done well. Now, I want to introduce my man Greg Valentine right here, because Greg has got something to say about the Briscoe sisters and also that sissy Indian running around here with no feathers, Wahoo McDaniels. Talk to Greg about it.
All right, Greg. Well, first of all, you've seen, Bob Cottle, what happened out here in a tag match, Paul Jones and myself against Wahoo McDaniel and Jack Briscoe, where they pulled Humperdinck in there. Every time they get a chance to get a hold of Humperdinck and slap him around, they do. Well, it's uncalled for, and it's going to stop. And Jack Briscoe, you've been running around here for the last couple of weeks complaining about us jumping you in the parking lot, because you knew when you got on national TV and wrestled this man right here, number one, Paul Jones, you'd lose your title. And that's exactly what happened last week. The new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, claimed to be experts at the figure four leg lock. Well, this man is an expert at Indian death lock. Can you imagine him beating an Indian with an Indian death lock? And can you imagine me putting that figure four leg lock on either Jack or Jerry Briscoe or one other man? And you know what I'm talking about, Wahoo McDaniel. I can't wait to get a hold of you.
You know something? Tonight, Wahoo and Briscoe better be glad that Valentine and I were in a good mood. We're still celebrating my victory over Briscoe and winning a Mid-Atlantic belt. We're actually nice guys tonight. They're lucky that we didn't break their arms or break their legs. And for people who don't know, the Indian death lock was invented by a white man from Texas, and it was invented to beat Indians. That's why it's called the Indian death lock. So Briscoe, bring your little brother. I don't care. Valentine don't care. Valentine will take on anybody. And I guarantee you one thing. You know, Valentine, I think it'd be more fair of a fight. You and I wrestled Briscoe brothers, and throw in Wahoo, throw in Youngblood.
Yeah, make
throw
it in a Steve handicap. Yeah. Put the whole tribe in there. Right, we'll right,
right.
Them all.
Right, what a fight that would be. Like seven against two.
Jack Briscoe Jimmy Valiant, and Jay Youngblood. Watch yourselves. Keep one eye behind your back because you missed it with a hornet's nest knob, Jack.
See you next week, fans, and until then, so long for now.
You're stirring with a hornet's nest, so remember, keep one eye behind your back. Which, I guess Killer Carl Cox could do. How could I edit that out? How could I try to make that fade out and do anything else? You needed to hear that one in its entirety, folks. So there we go. That's how Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling ends. But you know what? We're not going to end it on that note. And the reason we're not going to end it on that note is because as we have been following the saga of Roddy Piper in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, getting stabbed in Raleigh, losing the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship to Jack Briscoe, and going on a path of good, a redemption tour. We see him teaming with Ricky Steamboat. We see him teaming with Wahoo McDaniel, the man he once brought Abdullah the Butcher in to butcher. But we've been hearing this from Roddy Piper, and up in Mid-Atlantic, it was more of an instantaneous thing. Being his home territory, they were able to do that. On Georgia television, where he was a noted presence, obviously, as the co-host of the show with Gordon Solie and mixing it up with people like Tommy Rich and the Armstrong family, they let it play out a little bit longer, and Ole Anderson came up with a little bit more of a story that has been involving Don Morocco and Gordon Solie himself, who had been knocked over by Don Morocco, menaced, which led to Roddy Piper jumping on Don Morocco, and it led to some of the audio we played last week where Gordon Solie was basically questioning who Roddy Piper was, this enigma that Roddy Piper is. What is Roddy Piper? And ultimately, Gordon settled on Roddy Piper being an island unto himself. And Roddy Piper had returned to the program this week, so after you had gotten done watching Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, you may have started watching Georgia Championship Wrestling, and it was a very notable episode for lots of different reasons, including the Buzz Sawyer-Tommy Rich feud, Mr. Wrestling 2, getting into it with different people. So there was a lot that was going on there, but him back on the show, you knew he had to brush up against some different people, and Ole Anderson and Ivan Koloff would be two of those people, and I'm going to play a little bit of audio right now here of Roddy Piper starting the show off and Ole Anderson coming out to take exception to him.
Well, it's certainly a pleasure to welcome back to World Championship Wrestling, Roddy Piper. Roddy, welcome aboard.
Well, Mr. Solie, it's nice to be back. You see, all of a sudden, what they're trying to do is, you see, this is what's left of Don Morocco here. We got a nice hat of Don Morocco, and they're trying to kick me off. They're trying to fire me again from TV because I cause all kinds of trouble. Well, that's okay. It'll only be the 43rd time I've been fired from something. Good. How you doing? Yeah, so they're trying to do all kinds of things because Morocco is all of a sudden mad at me.
Well, I wouldn't exactly say mad, maybe a little upset. It's amazing. All the time I've seen you've always been on TV, always right here, flapping your jaws. I made a little statement. Oh, look, you get your hands in your pocket.
Yeah, because I'm not afraid of anything. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people really think a lot of you, and I guess with all those little cute remarks, you're a pretty smart guy. But if you watch the TV, I don't know where you were, but I'll tell you what happened. I didn't like really what you did to me, and so I just very kindly would ask, and did ask at that time, for an apology, and I ask for it again now. An apology, that's all. Then we forget about everything.
An apology? An apology?
An apology.
For what?
Well, maybe you don't remember. I'll refresh your memory. Last week, you hit me, you know, maybe once, maybe twice, I don't know.
I wasn't here last week.
Oh, 2 weeks ago?
Oh, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, now I'm sorry. Now you're going to make... I forget, huh?
Well, I don't care.
No, okay. All I'm saying is, you make the apology... And everything is forgiven.
You know, the way I figured is this. If you would have minded your own business in the first place, you wouldn't need to be asking for an apology. And so you just simple as this. You just stay out of my way, pig face, and you won't have to worry about nothing, man. Pig face? Hey! Hurtful!
Hurtful! Hey! No, no, ooh, don't give me that crap, ooh. You tell him or you tell anybody else, you don't be talking to me like that, and he doesn't be talking to me like that, and you get his fat butt out of here, and I'll make sure we'll see who
Roman, before I move on here and play some other clips, Roddy Piper and Ole Anderson, magic on the microphone together. Roddy Piper pointing out one of the 497 million times he was fired by Ole Anderson there. So a little bit of truth in that promo that he was cutting there. But Piper just a... This was... We talked about a tour de force show with him when he defeated Jack Briscoe for the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, that episode of the show where he just ran roughshod with the microphone, you know, in a lot of ways with what we're going to be hearing and what we've already heard there, the, you know, going back and forth with Ole Anderson. This was another banner day for Roddy Piper.
Yeah, and when you think Piper and Ole Anderson, the phrase that comes to my mind is, you know, back then you had to talk them into the building. And man, those two on the mic, they could have packed them in. And Ole with the sarcasm, and, you know, when Gordon says, ooh, and Ole goes, don't give me that ooh-ooh stuff. Just cracked me up. But yeah, great stuff with two legendary talkers in Piper and Ole Anderson.
Now, Ivan Koloff is down in the Georgia area, and I don't think he'll be staying long. I think he actually will venture up to the WWF not long after this, but what matters for now is he's down there, and he crosses paths with Roddy Piper here on the microphone, which leads to another good exchange and just another feather in Roddy Piper's cap today.
I just like to say, you know, I ain't trying to be no kind of hero out here. I ain't trying to run for president. I just want to say something, man. I don't let nobody put me on.
This is your Koloff's interview time. I want to say one thing to the people. I see that this Destroyer is world champion. I see the Samoanian as the world tag team champion. But I was thrown out of the tournament. I don't know for what reason to this day. Now I understand.
But you were thrown out of the tournament because you took a chain and wrapped it around some young kid's neck. Just a second there.
Just another thing, Roddy Piper. I want to say one thing. First of all, I'm supposed to be out here on the interview. These American people, every time I get in the ring to wrestle some Americans, they're always yelling at Koloff. USA, US, see just like this right there now. You see Koloff's head? You see the scars on my head?
I'll tell you one thing. You're talking about, you know, and I ain't no goody two-shoes. Every time I see Donny Osmond on my TV, I shoot the TV. But if they let a bald-headed geek like you in the state, man, they can't be all bad, brother. So why don't you just take on your next jackass and just wander on out?
Wait a minute, gentlemen.
Excuse me, Mr. Soli. No hassles, no trouble. I've already been fined so much money. I got money in my pockets. I walk in loaded. I walk out in a pair of underwear. They're doing all kinds of stuff to me. So I'm sorry, Mr. Soli. You're having no more trouble out of Roddy Piper. I'm a nice guy. I'm like Shirley Temple. Hello, how are you? And that's as simple as that. What more can you ask for?
You know, Roddy, you never cease to amaze me. Really, you never cease to amaze me. I've got to ask you a question, though, something that's on the minds of everybody. I don't know if you know about it or not, but last week I've had literally, I think, everybody in this room, and I've had thousands of letters. People want to know, what is Roddy Piper? What makes Roddy Piper tick? And one of the things that has, one of the things that has me particularly mystified is something that happened a couple of weeks ago on the Omni between you and Morocco.
That was a good one, too, huh? Yeah, I like that one, yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Do you mind? I've got the videotape of that. I'd like to show it to the people once again, but I'd like to get your side. I'd like to find out what was on your mind when you walked into the ring, okay?
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you exactly. I always tell you what's on my mind. Are you kidding me? Okay. Have you ever known me to keep my mouth shut?
I'll tell you. All right.
You see, first of all...
I'll go ahead and clip it right there and mention that they are referring to the match that took place on August 29th. The National Heavyweight Championship Tournament took place that day, but the real main event on the show was the Falls Count Anywhere match between Tommy Rich and the magnificent Don Morocco. They have been feuding for quite some time. Johnny Rich has been involved. Roddy Piper has been involved. You'll hear how right now.
Morocco was going to try to sucker me. Oh, all of a sudden he got beat there. What a shame, huh? Was it because you were looking at me? So now he's going to be a big man, right? Shove everybody out of the ring and come on to Roddy Piper. But notice the approach that he takes. You see, I know Morocco. I know what you're doing, Morocco. You notice he's looking at me, and you know what he's saying to me now? He says, hey, Piper. He says, what's wrong? Be a friend now. Lotus in my right hand. See what? He's looking around. He says, I never gave him a chance, never took a cheap shot at him, never said nothing. He says, Piper, be my friend, right? What does he do? He turns to me and says, ha ha. Aren't you a nice guy? I'm a nice guy. What does he do? Oh, you idiot! I had a roll of quarters. Yeah. You see him flying? I'm talking about 10 pounds worth of quarters. I'm talking about, it ain't the first time that I was born and lived on the street. I know what it's like, you see. So, Mr. Morocco, simply put on the jacket because I have no more business. But do you think in front of 25 million people at home that you're going to backhand me down here and take after a gentleman like this, that I'm just going to lay down there and go, arr, 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 like a little puppy dog? Well, you are wrong, Jack. I ain't that kind of man. I'm my own man. I do what I want to. I don't agree with what everybody and how you do
it. Why don't you shut up for 5 seconds? You're so good at explaining. You're so good at talking. Why don't you just say a couple little, huh?
Keep costing me money every time I'm out here.
It's going to cost you a lot more money, Piper. I'm telling you this. You go out here and you explain to everybody. You tell everybody how this happened and that happened. I love it. Fairy Tales by Roddy Piper. Now all I want from you is an apology. And I waited long enough. Long enough, Piper. I want the apology and I want it now.
Okay, it's very, very simple. I'm going to tell you really nice. I'm going to tell you like a gentleman because I know you're a very strong man. You're strong as an ox and you're almost as smart. I am not apologizing to you.
So that match at the Omni between Don Morocco and Tommy Rich, Roddy Piper sauntered into the ring, took his jacket off. He was wearing a suit, took the jacket off, put it over the turnbuckles. That caused a distraction for Don Morocco, who was then rolled up by Tommy Rich. He had been dominating Tommy Rich for a while up until that point. He then loses, throws Tommy Rich out of the ring. The referee starts to drag Tommy Rich to the back. He squares off with Roddy Piper, and as you heard, tries to take a shot at Roddy Piper, misses. Roddy Piper hits Don Morocco in his hands, a roll of quarters. He throws the quarters up into the air afterwards, calmly puts the jacket back on, leaves the ring as Don Morocco is just laid out there. And then we heard Ole Anderson come out. Once again, looking for an apology. He does not get an apology. He also gets a handful of hot rod. No quarters involved here, but a smack to the face sends Ole reeling. Roddy Piper walks away. We're going to hear a little bit more from Roddy Piper here coming up to hype up the local towns, Roman, but Piper just a hell of a day.
You know, Piper used a roll of quarters there in Georgia as a babyface. And several weeks earlier in Mid-Atlantic, he used a roll of quarters as a heel. And that just goes to illustrate, you know, what we had talked about a few podcasts ago, that Piper is the same guy no matter what. You know, how often do you see a babyface use a roll of quarters? But the crowd loved it. And if memory serves correct, it is right around this time that Georgia Championship Wrestling actually ended up on Entertainment Tonight, which was a big deal at the time. And that's not something that you would see where wrestling shows, clips of it would be on the news, because back then they looked at wrestling in a very condescending tone. But they actually did a piece on Georgia Championship Wrestling on Entertainment Tonight. And if my memory serves correct, and I think it is, it was from right around this time.
Oh, it sure was. Talking about being the number one show on cable TV, and then actually featured Roddy Piper and Don Morocco sitting next to each other talking. And then the clips that they actually showed on that show were from Don Morocco going after Gordon Solie, which caused Roddy Piper to jump on him. So that is available on YouTube and some other places as well, too, in good quality to boot. But Ole Anderson was doing a hell of a job around this time. You know, Georgia had a really good run with a couple different people booking it at different times. You know, it dipped at some points, like with the Fullers and everything, but from the time that that show was shot up on SATCOM 1 in late 1975 to basically around now and in the next couple of months here, as Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer continued to feud, Georgia Championship Wrestling was a monster. And Ole Anderson deserves some of the credit there, and they were hitting on a lot of cylinders. And when you have talent like Roddy Piper around, it's really easy to. And we're going to continue on with Piper here just a little bit, because we have a promo setting up his match for the next day, September 12th at the Omni, originally scheduled to be against Don Morocco. He would now be facing Ole Anderson. And after that, we're also going to hear a promo for Huntington, West Virginia, because these came from Chris Zellner, who put them up on YouTube. Where the originals come from, I do not know, but somebody was up there getting Georgia TV and getting a promo for Huntington, West Virginia that would feature Roddy Piper facing off against the Super Destroyer on September 18th. We'll go ahead and start playing those right now so you can hear Roddy Piper continue to have his hell of a day.
Wrestling in Augusta, Georgia, on Tuesday in Waycross, Georgia, at the City Auditorium, on Thursday at Albany State College Gym, and on Friday in Decatur, Georgia. And all matches, of course, will begin promptly at 8:30. We hope all of you make your plans to attend.
I'll tell you something now, you see. All of a sudden now, it's going to cost me another $1,000 to knock down some idiot that I know I can knock down in my worst day, man. So let me tell you something. You want to talk about the Omni? If I got to wrestle, man, I got to wrestle just to pay the fines I get right here on this television. I'll tell you what. You want it? Hey, Pigface, you want to fight me in the Omni? Hey, Morocco, you want to fight me in the Omni? I don't take nothing from nobody. I ain't on nobody's side. I've been seeing you running roughshod over all these guys for a long time, mister. You want to try running roughshod? You try running roughshod over me, and you'll find out, brother, I spit back. The only difference is I spit fire, brother. Yeah.
Well, looks like he'll take either one.
Thank you very much. Huntington, West Virginia, you know, the Super Destroyer. A fellow with a mask on. You see, there's lots of reasons why people wear masks. Sometimes they wear masks so you can't see pain in their face. Sometimes they wear masks just to try to psych you out. And it's not that case here with the Super Destroyer. It's because he's got big green warts all over his face and a nasty lip and nasty, nasty eyes. And the man does not psych me out at all. You think you're going to psych out Hot Rod Super Destroyer? Oh, I know all about you. I know what you say. You're 300 pounds. You're a huge man. You're the baddest man in the land. But that's the difference between you and me. I ain't never been bad at nothing in my whole life.
Now, I know this is a Mid-Atlantic podcast, but I couldn't let that go without playing it. We've been talking about Piper for so long, and he's officially a good guy now, and the most good guy of terms down in Georgia, which means you're slapping Ole Anderson in the face. And you're running down the brand new national heavyweight champion, the Super Destroyer, Scott Hogg Irwin, who he will be meeting in Huntington, West Virginia, coming up. He'll be facing either Pigface or Morocco at the Omni tomorrow night. He ends up facing Ole Anderson, as I mentioned. And, you know, that show, I will also mention the show from August 29th. That was also the show that the Wild Samoans, alongside Sonny King, won the National Tag Team Championship from Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, and the National Tag Team Championship would take on a little bit more meaning down there because, as we mentioned in the past couple of shows that we've done here, Ole Anderson has returned the World Tag Team Championship belts, and one thing I know is going to be happening soon, Don Kernoodle is going to be getting a long-distance phone call from Sergeant Slaughter. We're going to be talking about that a lot more coming up here in the next couple of shows, Roman.
On a little personal note, Mike, I just want to spend 5 seconds or so. I wanted to say thank you to Kevin Dignam for his Christmas present he gave me. Very nice, very thoughtful. And as far as the show goes, you know, I thought it was a fun show to watch. And, you know, Mid-Atlantic's just got all kinds of talent, and we've got more things to look forward to. We got Slaughter coming back. We know Abdullah's going to be in the area. And it's just, this was a good time to be a wrestling fan. You know, wrestling has been known to kind of have peaks and valleys and whatnot. But between this and then Piper going back and forth to Georgia, Ole going back and forth to Georgia, like, this was a fun time to be a fan if you had access to these shows.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of good stuff kind of going on everywhere. You know, 82 and 83. So many changes in the wrestling business between 1981 and 1984. It's literally, it was a whole new world that they got opened up and developed there. For every San Francisco or tri-state that was on death's door, there was a place like Mid-Atlantic that was continuing to thrive, and the entire Southeast was certainly thriving at this time. And before I get to a little bit of a run around the territory for the results, I will mention that on Worldwide Wrestling on September 11th, we got Mike Rotundo and Jay Youngblood defeating Jim Dalton and Ben Alexander, Greg Valentine defeating Kelly Konitsky, Private Canoodle defeating King Parsons, Paul Jones defeating Johnny Weaver, and then a main event of Ricky Steamboat, Jack Briscoe, and Wahoo McDaniel defeating Juan Reynosa, Bill White, and Ken Tim. So all the heavy hitters on that show there. We got Dalton, we got Alexander, Reynosa, Bill White, Ken Timms. I'm missing David Patterson right now, Roman. I wish he could have been around to celebrate and all this stuff too, but an action-packed episode of Worldwide Wrestling that hopefully one day will make it up onto the WWE Network. But you know what it's time for now.
Let's take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic wrestling events coming up in your area.
All right, we begin our results the day after the taping. Thursday the 9th, Sumter, South Carolina at the Exhibition Center. Johnny Weaver defeated Jerry Briscoe by DQ. A rare face-versus-face match. Paul Jones defeated Jack Briscoe, and Wahoo McDaniel battled Greg Valentine to a double disqualification. Also on Thursday the 9th in Fishersville, Virginia, Keith Larson defeated Private Nelson. Private Canoodle defeated Jay Youngblood. Ricky Steamboat faced off against Leroy Brown and defeated him by disqualification. And Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a cage match. On Friday the 10th in Charleston, South Carolina, Mike Davis defeated Private Nelson. Jay Youngblood defeated Gene Anderson. Leroy Brown defeated Ricky Steamboat. And Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff. I did note the Davis-Nelson result just because even though he does pick up some victories, you'll notice that Private Nelson is always on the losing end of things, whether it be in tag team matches or in singles matches. And you'll also note that Private Canoodle is far more taken care of as he was in Keenansville, North Carolina on Friday the 10th, where he defeated Ron Ritchie. Also on that show, Jack Briscoe knocked off the Ninja, and Wahoo McDaniel battled Greg Valentine to another double disqualification. On Saturday the 11th in Lumberton, North Carolina, Porkchop Cash and King Parsons faced off against the Privates. Jack Briscoe faced off against the Ninja, and Wahoo McDaniel faced Greg Valentine. Sunday afternoon show in Kingsport, Tennessee on the 12th saw Jack Briscoe defeat Joe Ledoux. Wahoo McDaniel and Greg Valentine battled to another double disqualification. Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown by disqualification. And Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a cage match. On Monday in Greenville, South Carolina, Jimmy Valiant defeated Joe Ledoux by disqualification. Leroy Brown defeated Ricky Steamboat. And Jay Youngblood and Johnny Weaver defeated the Privates. No wrestling in Raleigh on Tuesday, but there was wrestling in Columbia, South Carolina, a Township Auditorium on the 14th. Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff in a loser leaves town match. And as we know, come Saturday night, Ivan Koloff would be showing up in Georgia Championship Wrestling. Also on that show, Private Canoodle defeated Johnny Weaver and Paul Jones defeated Jack Briscoe. Also on Tuesday in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, Ricky Steamboat defeated Leroy Brown. Jay Youngblood defeated Joe Ledoux by disqualification, and Wahoo McDaniel defeated Greg Valentine. And that takes us back around to Wednesday the 15th, back to Charlotte, WPCQ Studios, Channel 36, and the September 18th, 1982 edition of the show, as reported by the WWE Network, will feature Porkchop Cash and Keith Larson uniting to take on Paul Jones and Greg Valentine in a tag team match main event, plus Wahoo McDaniel, Ricky Steamboat, and many more in action. Boy, I think they undersell some of the action with some of these previews that they have on the network, but hey, that's why we are here, right? As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and would like to connect with it more, I invite you to follow us on all of our forums of social media, especially our Twitter. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And also, please support all of the shows here on the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving the history of professional wrestling. And I'm proud that this show, executive produced by me, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us home, Uncle Bob.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.